Well, government leaders and politicians at this moment are so bent on power at all cost. Well, the energy they expend to defeat the opposition leaves we the people more vulnerable than ever before. In a word, they are reactive and not proactive. Something I've been thinking about, friends. Our program today will address this problem and one of the more serious threats, I believe, to the Republic, terrorism. We will hear from three top leading experts, Dr. James Mitchell, Ilana Friedman, and IQ Al Razzouli, today on Viewpoint Presents.
It's time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint Presents.
Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Friends, our 10-part series continues in the special production here. This is a big one today, the root of terrorism. Are we any more prepared today than we were 18 years ago before the 9/11 attacks changed our lives, our country, changed the world, right? It's funny how we become complacent, I find. And, you know, like even right now, we're sort of at a lull. We don't hear a lot about terrorism right now. That's the time that I start to think and worry, actually, when things are quiet, people. That's the time I think we need to pay attention as to what's really going on. We'll do that today on the program here. We have, joining us on this program throughout the next hour, you'll meet several top folks on terrorism, people who understand what terrorism is about, and hopefully people that will teach us a few things. And again, this program is just to get us to think. This is all about getting all of us to think. This whole 10-part series has been about that. I'd like you to meet today Dr. James Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell was involved in the development of the CIA's Enhanced Interrogation Program. And as you may recall from many of those reports, he interrogated 14 of the most senior high-value detainees in U.S. custody. Now, his book, Enhanced Interrogation, is clearly a must-read. It's on Amazon. It's also in the America Out Loud bookstore. You can get it. Dr. Mitchell has a PhD in clinical psychology from the University of South Florida, served 22 years in the U.S. Air Force, and retired as lieutenant colonel. And that makes you kind of unique to be able to look at this thing as a psychologist. I always find that you have a unique take on things, Jim, and I always appreciate that, having you on. So it's good to start the program with you here. And so I want to ask you here, are we any more prepared today than we were back then, 18, 19 years ago, before the 9/11 attacks changed our lives and changed the world here? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think certainly we're better prepared in a lot of ways. The threat of terrorism is at least in the minds of the general public, where it wasn't really in the minds of the general public before 9/11. And if you look at something like the 2017 National Security Strategy, you'll see that fighting terrorism has a number of priorities now that weren't necessarily in the forefront of our national security strategy prior to 9/11. For example, disrupting terrorist plots or taking direct action against folks or eliminating their safe havens and cutting off their sources of finance and material and support and forcing other countries who are harboring them to take some of the responsibility for it and taking direct action in our own country to combat the radicalization through the use of the internet. So there are things that we're doing now that make us better prepared, but it doesn't eliminate the threat. And I think it would be foolish for us to think it's not possible for at least homegrown attacks or radical Islamic-inspired attacks to take place.
Yeah. What, you know, what do you think with the caliphate, the success that the current administration has had, the caliphate had really grown out there in the Middle East in a big way with ISIS and a lot of the radical jihad and just the terror that was coming from. But now the caliphate has been knocked down a little bit. But many say that's even dangerous in itself because it kind of has pushed them out a little bit into the world. They go underground, in other words. They become more resourceful. Is that a problem?
Well, it's a shifting, right? It's a shifting of what the threat is. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, if they could have established an actual country, an actual caliphate, mm-hmm. and they could have, you know, became part of the United Nations and did some of the things that North Korea was doing, although I don't think that would have ever really happened, they would have been a much larger problem because then they could deny extradition and a bunch of other stuff. They've been beaten back, but with that comes the negative effect of having their fighters who are battle-hardened and had a chance to use the battlefield as a laboratory to learn their skills, returning to their homes in other countries to set up these terror networks and to think about launching plots from and attacks from there. So I think that it's a little bit like playing whack-a-mole in the sense that which is that game they play at the carnival where you try to hit that plastic mole with a hammer or a mallet, because they're going to pop up and they're going to keep popping up because the ultimate goal of establishing a global Islamic caliphate mm-hmm. is not going to go away. And those people who make their living, who get hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars promoting that ideology, are not going to stop doing that. So we're going to have to deal with this for some time to come.
Yeah, so I take a lot from what you just said, and, you know, like you say, we're going to have to deal with it for some time, but the internal threat, you have the external and the internal threats. I mean, as we speak right this moment here, isn't it safe to say that they are, I mean, they're looking for ways to defeat us? As you just said a moment ago, it's a worldwide, these people think in long-term moments. They don't think like we think, Jim. We think in short-term pauses, you know, but they think more long term, don't they?
Yeah, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and even Abu Zubaydah, two of the most senior terrorists that I interrogated, both mm-hmm. told me that we've already been defeated, that the worldwide caliphate already exists, wow. not in this time, but in future times, and all they need to do is not quit. In fact, what they said was, we don't have to defeat you, we merely have to fight you long enough for you to defeat yourself by quitting. And then we will slaughter you. So they do have a different perspective on the timeline that's involved.
Yeah. Now, what you just say is probably, to me, one of the most profound things I've ever heard on terrorism, and that's coming from the mouth of the terrorists themselves. Not in this time, but they've said to you psychologically they've accomplished what they wanted to accomplish by getting this thing rolling, which we're starting to see some of those impacts around the world. We're seeing it here in the United States. We're seeing it with the congressional races just recently, where a couple of Muslims got elected to Congress even. And that was a big surprise to a lot of people. And we're seeing it with some of our communities, where there's even talk about Sharia law coming. I mean, this is part of that master plan. How much concern are we, should we be with that, Jim? Do we... are we turning the other cheek? I mean, how real is this? I mean, you know?
Right. I think one of the things that you asked me is whether or not I thought terrorism was still the greatest threat to America. And I don't think the terrorists represent an existential threat to America. I think we represent an existential threat to America. They can't defeat us, but we can defeat ourselves. And that's part of what they're counting on.
You know, which is what they said to you, Jim. They said that to you.
Right. They said it's in essence that what we were going to do mm-hmm. was we were going to give up and allow them to take over. And we do that by capitulating, you know, in the name of religious tolerance, we allow an intolerant religion to establish itself in our country. You know, in the name of freedom, we allow people to have child brides and to practice female genital mutilation and other things that are against our national values, as if we should be ashamed of having American values. So I think that our biggest problem really is recognizing that this thing happens on two fronts. The one front is the battlefield, and we're going to respond to terror attacks by taking swift action to try to destroy those groups who are doing it, and to do the sorts of things that we need to do to make them more toothless. What we're not very good at is recognizing the creeping ratcheting up of Sharia and the call for a global caliphate within our own country. You know, I have several friends who work in the government, and one of the things that I've been told is we now have extremist Islamic ideology in every state of the union, and that there are people who are actively promoting the destruction of the United States. So in all of these states.
Right here on our soil.
On our soil already. And part of that's been our own problem, because mm-hmm. we've allowed this sort of open door policy when it comes to bringing people into our country and then not vetting those people who are associated with them, their cousins and uncles and whoever else who come into the country, you know, and this chain migration thing. And part of it's because we haven't done a very good job of keeping track of the people that we let into our country or what happens to them when they choose not to leave. So part of that's our problem, and it illustrates what I was talking about before. We're electing people to Congress, and we're electing people in local elections who are on record as opposing our way of life.
Mm-hmm.
That's our fault. We're doing that. We're letting people into our country who want to destroy us. That's our fault. We're doing that. We're giving money to countries whose stated security objective is to destroy our country and to destroy our allies. That's our fault. We're doing that, and we're doing that with our vote, and we're doing that with our willing to tolerate those people being in power who capitulate to those kinds of actions.
God, that is so well said. That is so well said. We're doing it to ourselves. I hope everybody's taking notes on that, man. If everything stays the same as it is right now, Jim, let's just call it the status quo. What we're doing right now continues. Our style of life right now, with everything, immigration, borders, the congressional people, some of these elections, localized, national. Will we have another 9/11?
You mean to the size and extent of 9/11?
Will we, something on that scope, which could be almost anything, Jim. It could be almost anything. Will we have another one like that?
Well, it seems like what they're very, very good at is weaponizing our complacency. So whether or not they could use planes as missiles, I don't know. But I would be more concerned about some rogue nation like Iran providing a nuclear device to some terrorist organization, or some terrorist organization stealing nuclear material or getting a bio material or a chemical material, which they are attempting to develop. And under those circumstances, I think that, you know, if our intelligence communities and our military and our law enforcement mm-hmm. community is properly resourced and led, mm-hmm. they can probably protect us from a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. What they can't protect us from, though, is ourselves in terms of letting these sorts of threats fester in our own communities.
Right. And remember the other lesson here. We have to be right 100% of the time, Jim. They don't, you see?
It's hard. I think it's hard to one of the things that I think that we have to do is we have to punish the people who are providing money to those folks.
Yeah.
And those kind of big attacks like the one on 9/11 require a great deal of money. Mm-hmm. If we can control the financial support that's going to those groups, then it's a little bit harder for them to establish that size of an attack. But if you're financing a terror group, you expect, because you're going to get into paradise for doing that, that there's actually going to be a terror attack. If you can punish them in such a way that they don't get the financing and they don't provide the financing, it's much more difficult for them to do that. And in addition to punishing them, of course, you got to work with the financial organizations around the world to make it more difficult for them to hide that money.
Yeah.
So, and move that money around. So I think money's a big piece of it.
It is.
even in our own country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So let me ask you this now, from big picture standpoint of everybody understanding what we're talking about here and where the dangers are, is Islam a religion or an ideology?
Well, it's all of those things, isn't it? I mean, it's whatever. There's a thousand different ways for you and me and every other academician and scholar and you know, water cooler philosopher to divide this up. It doesn't really matter how we divide it up. It matters how they divide it up. It matters how they define it. Okay. And those men who attacked us on 9/11 mm-hmm. made it clear to me that Islam was a religion, but it's more than just a religion. It's a way of life. It's a
ideology.
Way of government.
Ideology.
It's a complete ideology that includes, absolutely. For example, hiding your weapons in mosques
exactly.
where people are having their prayers, so that your enemies who are constrained by the desire not to offend anyone won't look for those things.
All right.
It is a complete ideology. One that is expected to influence how you govern, how you behave, what you choose to do, who should be enslaved, mm-hmm. all of that stuff.
Okay, now let me follow up a couple of quick things here. Is what we're speaking about now, in your opinion, is this the root of modern day terrorism? Do people need to understand that?
Well, Islam, in the literal interpretation of the Quran and the Hadiths, is not and never has been a religion of peace. I asked Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, why, if Islam was a religion of peace, mm-hmm. every time I heard anybody talking about radical Islam, people were dying. And he said, well, Islam's a religion of peace because the world will be at peace when Islam governs the entire world. And so by slaughtering people and enslaving people and doing these terror attacks, we're spreading peace because we're spreading Islam.
Yeah, yeah. From my understanding, Jim, and I don't know if this is your understanding, but they put more Muslims again in powerful positions in our government than ever before in history. Is that what you understand as well?
I do know that they were more willing to risk our democratic principles by embracing the ideology of a group of people whose mission it was to destroy them.
Yeah, I mean, those eight years or 10 years, whatever it is, and still ongoing here. I mean, they weren't helpful to the fight, this fight that we're dealing. I mean, we went backwards. Didn't we lose something in that period of time? I mean,
there were more terror attacks during his administration. They didn't go away. And if he had been the hope of our country to eliminate terror attacks, then those wouldn't have been happening. But they did get worse around the world, and they got we had attacks on our own soil. So I think at best they view him as a useful idiot and an apostate, because he was a Muslim who now claims to be Christian. I think that what President Obama did put us more at risk. I think the things that President Trump has proposed, mm-hmm. if they're followed through on,
right.
you know, closing the border, better vetting, that sort of stuff, will make us safer. And I like the idea that we're going to take prioritized action to disrupt attacks and direct action against those people, particularly when it comes to WMDs and weapons of mass destruction, and those groups who would be providing weapons of mass destruction or financial aid to terror groups who want to destroy us.
Yeah, yeah. I do believe we're at a pivotal moment of time, and I think everybody, this is one of the most serious topics to me of this entire series right here, this terrorism, and I had put it off to this point because I wanted to do it justice, people. I wanted to make sure we did it justice. We had the right people on here to talk about this. But this is a serious this is a serious problem. This is a very serious topic here.
Well, the number one thing that our people can do is not tolerate the festering of this ideology, this radical global Islamic caliphate ideology in our country, and not elect people who are going to tear down the safeguards that have protected our country.
Yes, but we're not winning the cultural war is the problem, Jim. We're not, because we don't have the support of the media. And so we're not winning the cultural war out there. And the fact who's won the cultural war and who is winning it all the time is the politically correct crowd. Because as you stated early on, you can't talk about X without being incriminated, whatever that might be. But you can talk about Y, and that's perfectly legit. And so we're losing that cultural war, and the media, I think you would agree to say, is the media has, to me, been enemy number one.
Right, but that's what you see in public. What you see online. Okay. That's what you see in social media. Okay. Out there in the trenches are men and women who are risking their lives and dying every day to protect us. And what we need to do is be sure that they're adequately manned, adequately resourced, and adequately led in such a way that they can take care of the big picture problems. We need to take care of those things that we can influence and control, like what we do with our vote.
That is incredibly well said, and that's why the fight goes on here and continues every day, and it gives me a perfect moment to say, when you hear Dr. James Mitchell here, that this is why I get up in the morning, and it's why I do what I do here with America Out Loud, is exactly what he just said. This is the good fight, people. This is what we're all about. As I said to you before, we are pro-American. We're pro-Christian. We're pro-faith. We're pro-exceptionalism. We are pro all the things that many would look at against us. Hold it against us, if you will. We make no apologies for that. Tremendous thank you here to Dr. James Mitchell. And, you know, I always so enjoy people talking to it. You can see how encompassing the conversation is, and could talk for hours and hours and have at times with him. But I think the thing I enjoy is he's at least opening up your minds to think. And that's, again, I think the benefit of Jim, of what you bring to the table as a psychologist, I think is quite fascinating, combined with Tara, makes for a unique conversation, I have to say that. So listen, friends, his book, Enhanced Interrogation, again, on Amazon or in the America Out Loud bookstore, just go get that and read through if you haven't. Understand what the fight is about. We're not bigots here. We're not racist. We're not, we're not crazy people here. We just want everybody to understand what is at stake here and what the fight is all about. That's it. Simple said. We're not conspiracy nut jobs or any of that. Just be armed with knowledge. That's what I want you to be armed with, knowledge. And then make sure you have a gun close by, too. This is a big conversation. Let's keep it going here. More Viewpoint, friends, in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, most of the talk on terrorism is directed overseas in places like the Middle East, Afghanistan, places like Nigeria, and Europe. But what about homegrown terrorism, friends? It's a concern. And as I told you at the start of the program here, there's not enough attention being put on being proactive, I believe. It concerns me because sometimes that lull or that quietness, when it's not on our mind and our awareness and the news cycle, we can become complacent, and that could cost us dearly. Joining us on the program here now, Ilana Friedman. She's a veteran intelligence analyst specializing in terrorism and political matters. She trained in Israel. She's an advisor to law enforcement and global corporations. She's authored 4 books. You hear her often as a commentator here on the platform, friends. She's also a weekly columnist here at America Out Loud. So, Ilana, I've been thinking a lot about this in recent days. In fact, I was just talking to Dr. Mitchell about it. We have IQ coming up in just a moment here. And again, I do believe that a lot of the talk is directed in these other areas, but, you know, there's a lot happening back here at home that nobody's really talking about, because right now the focus is on the border, the southern border and all of that, and clearly that's one of the threats, but there are other threats as well. Specifically, I want to talk next and get your insight on really some of these jihadi training camps that are set up domestically here that I hear nothing about. I mean, I hear nothing about this one group, Jamaat al-Fukra, is an organization that I understand operates, if I have this correct now, about 20 or more of these camps in the United States. Tell us more about that and what that objective is.
Well, first of all, Jamaat al-Fukra is a very secretive organization. It was founded in Pakistan by a man who calls himself Sheikh Mubarak Ali Gilani. And he established the organization in 1980. He brought it over here after a visit in Brooklyn, where he apparently got a lot of support. There is a large Muslim population in Brooklyn, and he set up a mosque there. And then from there, they began to set up encampments around the country, mostly in the eastern part of the country. At the beginning of their lifespan, in the 80s and 90s, their people were involved in some pretty heinous crimes, mostly on the West Coast, in Washington and Oregon. But as this organization developed, their encampments that they set up, they're like compounds where people come and live and create a community, were set up on the East Coast in rural areas. Now, most organizations, particularly radical Islamic organizations, focus on big cities like New York or Dearborn, Michigan, or even outside of Washington, D.C., in some of the northern Virginia suburbs.
Are these actual training camps? Wait a minute. When you speak about the Northeast area.
These are camps where people go and live. Now, the problem is that they are so secretive, and law enforcement local law enforcement seems to be somewhat intimidated by them. So, for example, there's one in Hancock, New York, that they call Islamburg, and that's their headquarters. Local police that we knew just left them alone, even though they would bring in. We actually visited the camp about 10 years ago, and which is to say, when I say we, I mean people who a couple of people who worked with me, and one of them worked for me, and he went down to try to interview people down there and take photographs and so forth, which they did. They were very successful. And they what they discovered was that people who lived nearby heard sounds of gunfire. And now, to understand this organization, many of their recruits come from prisons where they are serving sentences, where they convert to Islam, and they come with their families to these compounds after they have finished their incarceration.
Right.
And then the way it worked in Islamburg was they would stay for a period of time and then with their families, and then overnight they would all disappear and the camp would be empty. And then it would fill up again with other people. Now, most of their members are African-American, and they are former prisoners. Now, if you put those two things together, and you know that these are former felons, and there is gunfire, and they're practicing in this encampment for warfare scenarios when they're not hunting. This is very worrisome, but we don't know where they go, and we don't know.
There's a lot we don't know.
We don't know. It's a very secretive organization, and a very interesting thing happened just very recently. The organization in Hancock, Islamburg, was threatened by a group of four teenagers who threatened to blow it up. And they were caught, and they have been incarcerated. But the interesting thing is the statement by the mayor of the of this little town, this encampment. And he says that they're just, you know, normal citizens, and all they want to be is just nice, good neighbors, good Americans. He says, we grow crops, we raise animals, we live like law-abiding citizens. We're a big part of this community. And, you know, this is...
So that's the narrative
he
they're...
He sounds very innocent.
All right, so that's the narrative they're trying to spin out there, that they're just
basically... Yeah, what's happening is they're trying to get themselves...
Okay.
They're changing their narrative, because when we went there, first of all, they didn't want to let us in, and secondly, they were very, very standoffish and very antagonistic. We did get pictures. We did have a brief interview, but the camp was empty at the time we went there.
Is this the same group that, if I remember, is this the same group that's out of Pakistan?
The Pakistani group is called Jamaat al-Fukra. In the United States, they call themselves Muslims of America.
I see. So that is one and the same then, basically.
They are the same.
Interesting.
Although Gilani denies it.
Okay.
It is. It's very clearly one and the same.
Well,
and they are connected, and he supports them and comes to visit them from time to time.
Well, obviously, if they're spinning this public relations narrative out there that they're just law-abiding citizens doing their thing, growing their vegetables, raising their kids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, clearly that's why they would take on the Muslims of America mantra rather than the terrorist group out of Pakistan. That would be, I would assume, part of the objective, I'm guessing, Ilana. But
well,
that,
yes, except that this effort at being part of the community is
right.
Something new. When we went there, they didn't want to have any part of the community. They wanted to be removed. This is why they go to the rural areas. They want to be removed from the contamination.
Why do you
think
they changed that stance? Why, any thought as to why they now have this new objective?
Well, there is something very interesting happening in this country, which is that if you, through the efforts of CARE, and I would venture to say with some authority, the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas, who are partners in CARE, with CARE, in fact, I would say that CARE is the face of Hamas in the United States, because of that, they have been on a program to try to put Islam into American society in a very important way in order to make America, in their words, a Muslim country.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though they only represent a single-digit percent of the American population,
right.
This is a goal that is fairly well documented.
Right.
So what has happened now in the last few years, we have seen Muslim members of Congress, Muslim in government, Muslims in local government, in the educational system, in the health system. And this is not to say that all Muslims are not, you know, important to our society, because most of them are. But we have this very insidious movement within our society to make the Muslim presence in America much more significant and defining than one would expect it to be, given its small numbers in the country.
All right, so a couple thoughts here, okay? When I think of these training camps, I think of them specifically out in the desert area, like we had that in the news some months ago. In fact, you and I talked about it on Viewpoint, as I recall. They had that terror training camp, and there were some people were killed there, and so on and so forth. You recall that? And
yeah, I do, but it was a different group.
That's what I wanted to ask you right there. Okay. When I think of these training camps again, I'm thinking in my mind, and I think a lot of Americans go to that sort of, they set up house in desert-type areas or what have you. I just want to clarify something now. When we talk about the Northeast and we talk about major areas, and the one you were just speaking about, New York, and I'm assuming from you there are many others up in the Northeast in this area here, they're setting them up in, what are you saying, suburban areas, just out, rural areas?
No,
rural
no.
areas.
These are rural wooded areas.
Rural wooded,
okay.
And,
and they are... Okay. These compounds are in isolated areas.
All right. How widespread do you see these camps for real in the United States? What are we talking about? How isolated is this, or how widespread is it?
Well, the individual encampments are isolated. But you have them in Hancock, New York, as I mentioned, in Michigan, in Tennessee, in Texas, in Georgia, two of them in Georgia, South Carolina, two in Virginia. And there are even two outside the United States, one in Canada and one in Trinidad.
So when they say operating about 20 or more, that's an accurate statement then?
It may be. I've seen everything from 9 to over 30.
All right,
and
all right.
And that's the problem with all the secrecy is that we really don't know.
All right, all right. And so now, how does this compare to what we call no-go zones that we see set up in Paris and Belgium and other areas, these no-go zones? Are these sort of no-go zones around these things? And are authorities able to get into these places as needed?
It seems to be changing. If what we read about Islamberg is correct, over the last week or so, when we were there, it was a no-go zone. They did not want us in there, and they did not want the local police in there, and the police kept their distance.
I want to go a little bit further with you when we talk about Islam now. Is Islam a religion or is it an ideology, Ilana?
I think it's both.
Okay.
It's certainly a religion to the people who believe in it. It has a God, as we imagine God to be.
Now, listen, in regards to the religion of peace, just to touch on that real fast, in fact, Dr. Mitchell and I just spoke moments ago about this religion of peace, and he basically said, listen, when they say a religion of peace from the people he's interrogated, some of these masterminds behind 9/11 and so forth, they say, they say religion of peace, but they say that's what it's going to be when they get rid of all the Christians and Jews. It'll be a religion of peace in their mind, but until then, so those words are being mistaken. They're being twisted, that it's not really a religion of peace per se, based on the code. Do you agree with that assessment?
I do agree with that. But I would also, caution the listeners and ourselves as well to understand that there are good people who are Muslim. And this is not to paint with too broad a brush. There is what we call radical Islam, and radical Islam is practiced by people who believe in a radical ideology, and who are willing to subjugate other people who are not Muslims to their belief, and these are the people who want to turn the United States into an Islamic state.
All right. I respect and appreciate what you just said. Now, what's interesting about this, so listeners understand, and I'm glad Ilana just said what she said, because when you hear in moments from our guest coming out of Europe, IQ Al-Razouli, you'll get a whole other take on that. He has a different sense, and I'm just going to tell you right now. I mean, he won't exactly agree with what we just said. And we're going to hear from that in a moment. So we'll get the idea of what this radical is, the radical aspect of a radical Muslim versus not. In just a moment, we'll get another perspective for somebody who was born in Baghdad, who was born in the center of a lot of this and has a pretty straightforward viewpoint. Now, Ilana, I want to ask you further here, just straight out, in your opinion, is Islam the root of modern day terrorism?
I think terrorism comes in many forms, but I think that the modern-day terrorism as we know it today is largely embedded in Islamic ideology. And so you have, the Chechen Muslims, and you have who carried out that terrible massacre in Beslan at a school where hundreds of children were killed. And you have the Middle East that we know with Israel and all the Muslim states around it that want to destroy Israel. That's terrorism. You have terrorism in Egypt with where the Muslims are attacking the Coptic Christians who have been there for thousands of years.
All right.
And so it takes many forms.
Yeah, no,
but
fair,
I think
fair
it's
point.
Important to understand that Islam is a very, very big
All
part
right.
of modern, modern day terrorism.
Fair point. Now, listen, I have one extra question I want to ask you, which is important. The last thing we have time for is, how concerned should we be with this, with domestic terrorism, with these training camps, with the infiltration of these folks throughout the nation, and that in a combination of anybody that's potentially coming over the southern border as well? How concerned and a threat is this to the Republic?
I would say that the Muslims of America are a small part of a much larger picture. The terrorists coming over the southern border is a huge, huge threat.
Okay.
The growing potential of small cells in the United States to carry out small terrorist attacks, that's growing. I would say that we need to be very aware, and we should stop throwing around Islamophobia as an epithet against people who really believe in the American dream and want America to be free and to be a place where everybody can be a part of the society as long as they want to make the society better, not make it worse.
All right. I mean, that is, I mean, that sounds to me like the voice of reason in many ways. Some would argue that, but listen, I think it's good advice to put out there. Listen, I know you must be learning some things out there. I know I'm learning some things here, and I knew this would be a most interesting program here. Again, the series here is Viewpoint Presents, friends. It's a 10-part series taking on what I believe are some of the biggest challenges of our generation. We've covered a whole lot here, and the series wraps up next week, in fact, with A Changing World. It's been an explosive series, and I've been thrilled that we've been able to bring it to you with all of these great voices. Big thank you here to Ilana Friedman. Coming up next, friends, we'll get another view from somebody on the other side of the world who was born in the center of a lot of that and has one of our weekly contributors as well on the platform. Very interesting man, IQ Al Razuli. More Viewpoint, friends, in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, friends, welcome back to Viewpoint Presents. And again, as I've said, this is a very serious topic. This is one of the top 10 that we wanted to visit here. Again, what I referenced as some of the biggest challenges of our generation. This is absolutely no exception to that rule on terrorism. What I like about today's program is we're all learning something. We're getting a very good overview with all these big voices of Dr. James Mitchell, Ilana Friedman, and now please welcome our friend and commentator and voice and columnist here at America Out Loud, IQ Al Razuli. And so we'll get a good perspective around the planet here. And let me tell you a little bit about IQ. He is an author of Lifting the Veil, and this is a trilogy you can get on Amazon, and you can absolutely get this trilogy in the America Out Loud bookstore, friends. IQ is an Iraqi-born Arabic speaker. He's considered one of the foremost authorities in the world on the subjects of Islam, and it's always a pleasure to have him on. IQ, I want to start with something that is a bit controversial and edgy, and because I want you to put it in perspective for listeners and for all of us to understand. In the previous segment we just had, it came up about a radical Muslim versus, a peaceful Muslim or somebody who is in the training camps. We had a segment about international terrorism, domestic terrorism, and we talked about some of the jihadi training camps domestically here with Al-Fukra. And I'd like you to comment and just put it in perspective. Now, you're somebody who was born right there in the Middle East. You understand the culture, the nature of it. You grew up all around it. You better speak about this than most. When people use the words, and this becomes very political, of course, but a radical Muslim versus a peaceful Muslim, can you explain to listeners the difference, if there is one, what that is, and what your feelings are on that, please?
The instant anybody speaks about radical Muslims, extremist Muslims, militant Muslims or moderate Muslims, then you should know they know nothing about Islam. And this is a fact. Why? Because Erdogan, the dictator of Turkey, a few years ago literally 3 years ago, when he met with the European Union leaders, he told them, why are you always discussing Islam in shades? There are no shades in Islam. You are either a Muslim, Sharia compliant, or you are not a Muslim. Now, he is one of the foremost authorities on the subject because he has turned Turkey from a secular state that Kemal Atatürk created into a Sharia compliant state. There are no shades in Islam. Just exactly the same reason, nobody will ever find in records, in writing, or on video, a moderate Nazi, a radical Nazi, a militant Nazi, or an extremist Nazi.
Interesting.
Nor a communist.
Yeah. I wonder, it's harder for Americans to say what you just said. Now, why is that? Well, you have this PC culture that has been created, but you also, IQ, have America, which is the land that attracts all different facets of life, right? I mean, that's to be an American, you can be a, you know, German, you can be Jewish, you can be all kinds of different cultures, and you can be an American. That's different than other cultures and backgrounds. And I'm wondering, we seem to have a harder time, like in the previous segments, nobody really quite says it in the way that you just put out there. So you're dramatic when you say that. You're speaking about the evidence of the Quran, which you teach and train about that all the time on our platform. But do you see why there's this thing in our country where people, if they say that, they're considered a bigot, a racist, a crude, obnoxious person. They are looked down upon. Do you understand that?
Of course I do. But who is looking down upon? The left, the liberals, the clueless nitwits. No, look, I am politically incorrect to such a to find me, you have to see me in the X-ray.
Yeah.
Spectrum of light. Let me put it another way. Look, having spent over 30 years studying, researching, comparing and contrasting the subjects of Muhammad, his Quran, his Sunnah, Arab and Islamic imperialism, etc., the following conclusions are indisputable, irrefutable and incontrovertible, no matter how unconventional or even outrageous they may sound to clueless, politically correct dimwits.
Right.
And I go.
Interesting.
These lies that have ever been insinuated into the human consciousness are: Allah is the same as the God of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Islam is a religion. Muhammad was a prophet. Islam means peace. Jihad is a spiritual struggle to commune with God.
Right.
And last but not least, the Quran was divinely revealed.
Right. I think I know the answer to this, but let me have listeners hear this. Is Islam a religion or ideology?
It's a cult belief system. It's not an ideology. It's a cult belief system, the cult of Muhammad.
Hmm.
Why? Because every single male Muslim has to emulate Muhammad, not Allah. He has to emulate the Sunnah, a Sunnah Nabawiyyah. Look, I don't miss my words.
Hmm.
I don't take bullcrap from anybody.
Yeah.
I have $1.5 million worth of challenges. I've had them for 10 years. I have challenged every single Muslim on the planet. I have challenged CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations, ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, to prove anything I say as either wrong or untrue.
Okay.
Not a single taker.
All right. I know you've done that. You've put it in articles before on the platform, and I know that. Is Islam the root of modern-day terrorism?
Not modern-day terrorism. It's been the root of terrorism for 1,400 years, for God's sake.
Wow.
For 1,400 years. Muhammad made Medina in the year 622 AD his base from which he conducted all acts of terror. Muhammad was the first leader, the leader of the first organized crime syndicate in human history. The mafia is nothing compared to Muhammad.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I mean, you know, and you again, in a lot of the history lessons when you write, I mean, people can read up about this in a lot of IQ's write-ins back at America Out Loud. You'll get a sense when he goes back to the chapters and the era of time that he just spoke about. He's got a lot of significant write-ins on the platform about that. Like, again, this is not a popular conversation, people. It's not. It's a conversation of facts and truth that I think our important message is to bring it to you, and you have to decide for yourself where to go with this. You see events happening in the UK. We see uprisings throughout Europe. Angela Merkel is in a great deal of trouble, clearly. Macron in France, same thing. Theresa May in the UK, same thing. I mean, Europe is in this very odd state right now of influx. And a lot of this has to do with topics we've talked about before with open borders. And again, so take a moment and explain where this is all coming from, the problem of really the mass migration out there that has happened and how that has changed Europe and how culpable these leaders are for the problem we're dealing with, IQ.
To be fair, it's not only Europe. America is even worse off than Europe. Look what's happening on your border in the south with Mexico.
Right.
Donald Trump wants borders, and he wants to put a wall. And the Democrats say, no, 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 we have to have open borders. Which nation on earth will accept open border?
Well, Russia? Europe. Europe does. What do you mean? Europe
does. No. Europe is not anymore.
You mean they've stopped that completely? Wait a minute. To go from country to country to country, you can't do that anymore?
They are not anymore. Okay. They have the borders now.
Okay. All right, so let me ask you this. Are you completely convinced? I mean, because it's hard to get a straight answer on the southern border. And I hear you. And listen, we cover this far and wide on this platform, what's happening at the border. And it's not just the southern border. It's the northern border as well. Nobody's talking about the northern border. That's another problem. And I've seen it. I've got evidence that shows who's coming over there as well. So are you saying you're completely convinced that the terrorist groups we're speaking about are coming over that border?
Good God, one has to be really stupid to be in America and ask, with all due respect, this question. Do you know that Hezbollah has got, terrorist organizations in Mexico, across the border from America?
They're in Mexico, Hezbollah, huh?
By the way, you also have 30 Muslim training grounds that the FBI knows about, has known about it for 15 years, and did nothing about it.
Well, we just talked about that with Ilana. You're exactly the Muslims of America, El Fruca, and the training camps, the jihadi training camps.
Thank you. So, you see, not only Europe is suffering. Mm-hmm. You Americans elected two Muslims to the House.
To Congress,
yes. Now, those two Muslims, what did they swear on?
The Quran.
On the Quran.
The Quran,
But the Quran is the nemesis of the American Constitution.
So
how stupid can you be?
So you think we, and I've never heard you say that in the way you just said it. That's interesting to me. So you're really perturbed at this point, and I'm sensing this frustration with you over a period of conversations we've had now with how bad the political scene has gotten here in this country. And you're suggesting now you think we're actually worse off here than what you're seeing in Europe. Is that what you're saying?
You are getting there.
Getting there.
Good God, you are getting there.
Okay.
All I'm saying is you're committing suicide while I'm talking to you.
I see.
By the way, when I say you, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about Americans.
Yeah, yeah.
49% of Americans are brain dead.
Well, it is a battle royal right now. It's a battle royal in Congress. So, of course, with the election of Nancy Pelosi, I think a lot of us never thought we'd see her again as Speaker of the House. So many of us are, you know, shocked and dumbfounded at that. But that's, you know, America has a tendency to do this. They give power to the other branch all the time, and then they'll give it back. And this is what they do. And sometimes I shake my head in disbelief, but it happens quite frequently, actually. They did it with George W. Bush when they gave power to Obama because they thought George W. was headed the wrong way. And they did it again after Obama when they put Trump, and they'll do it again with Trump back to Pelosi, and we'll see what happens next. But that's what the country tends to do.
Sorry, I don't You know, you might have excuses to give. I am intolerant. I cannot give excuses.
Well, all right.
I believe the beauty of America is that the individual is the one who decides.
That's right.
What made America great were the individual Americans. And all of a sudden, in the last few decades, individual Americans since World War II have lost the will.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't disagree with what you just said. What made America great was we the people. We the people. That's what made America great. You better believe it. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, brother, I talk about this. It's my regular diet every morning, every day. I am we the people here. So I get it. And my information is to drive this information out to the public so they get it. We're not racist. We're not bigots. We're not xenophobes. We're not anything. We're God-loving people, but
no,
we understand.
We are something. We are patriots.
Yeah, well, absolutely we're patriots. Hashtag patriots. We're all over that, brother. Absolutely all over that. Yeah, and I love that about you. You are a patriot as well. Yeah, and I want listeners to understand that. I mean, you're dealing with somebody here who is not specifically living here, but he's more patriot sometimes than people I meet that are living here in central part of the country, people. So that's a compliment to IQ. I really appreciate always his contribution here. So IQ, in our last couple of moments here, we have left here. It's been very interesting. I knew you would really set the thing on fire here. So it's why I saved the best for last, they say, huh? I knew you would do that, and I wanted you to bring this thing to a head. So basically, I'm thinking it's going to take another mass casualty event of some kind. I truly, honestly believe that. I believe there is ignorance all over the place, IQ. I believe people are turning blinders onto this stuff. I absolutely believe that as well. I believe the political elite are selling their soul. I think they're part of Satan's movement. I think Satan is alive and well here. He's got a lot of disciples out there on the front lines, quite frankly. I can point them out and give them to you name by name. I see them every day. We put out the good fight every day. Bottom line for listeners to understand, even with all these training camps that we've talked about on this program today, and a lot of the mosque and a lot of the things that are happening here, there's reason to be concerned is what your lasting message is. We have a moment or so left, so give us your last message to Americans so they hear you on the topic of terrorism here in the United States. What do we want to leave people with, please?
Very simple. Since every Muslim is Sharia compliant, then every Muslim is the eternal and mortal enemy of every non-Muslim human being called kuffar, infidels, currently comprising 80% of humanity. All Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, atheists, agnostics, and pagans. Second, it is impossible, and I repeat the word impossible, for any Muslim to be both a good Muslim and a loyal citizen among non-Muslims, kuffar. Now, I would dare anybody listening to prove me wrong.
All right. That's the voice, friends, of IQ Al-Razuli. And he brings a perspective that is most unique, obviously. You've heard some very unique perspectives on this program today with Dr. James Mitchell, Ilana Friedman, and IQ Al-Razuli. And I completely respect each of them. They're just great voices, and they bring each their truth to the platform, and you couldn't have a better program than what we just experienced here together. I really was looking forward to this program to really do something on terrorism that would help educate all of us. I think this program today did that, friends. Well, listen, this is all part of the 10-part series Viewpoint Presents. This has been a major lift for us here to put this out there. The 10th one of the series next week will be A Changing World. And this is very, very interesting subject matter here we will have. You can listen all 10 parts back on podcast at AmericaOutLoud.com. Friends, keep it here at America Out Loud. We have a lot going on the platform, and we invite you in there to check out the latest with some of the best writers and contributors and talkers and bloggers and people from around the globe, all on a mission of peace and a mission of what I call exceptionalism. And we will not apologize for that, friends. You can contact us here at talk@AmericaOutLoud.com. Friends, the Out Loud truth continues back at AmericaOutLoud.com.